Hey, this is a dark tangent, organizer of DEF CON. You're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 3, held July 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1995. Now, the Tropicana has since been renovated. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, all rights reserved, the dark tangent, and DEF CON Communications. Permission is expressly granted, though, for educational, non-profit use. If you have any more questions about DEF CON, or want to send me some email about the copyright status, please email me at dt@defcon.org, or the website is www.defcon.org. Now, kick back, get ready for some good speeches, and thanks for supporting it.
Next up is Peter Shipley with what he's found to be the best way to do a security audit of a given target company, physical and electronic. All right, today I'd like to talk about doing security audits. I mean, we all put people's firewalls and connected to various sites. I'm talking about actually waking up in the morning, showing up at the front door. And I'm going to talk about how I do this, and I'd like to invite other people who have done this to come up here and join the panel with me. So has anybody in here has actually done security audits or security audits in large companies? Would you like to join me? I mean, I'm not the elite person here. This guy knows stuff that I don't. I know stuff he doesn't. If we get together, much better talk. Anybody else? Come on. I mean, I'm not talking about people. What I'm talking about is like, what do you do? How do you approach the people? What's the best way to communicate with the company? I mean, if you just can sit there and tell it from home, oh, yeah, your firewall looks good, you're not doing a good job. And we're just going to go into those aspects and those points. Up, your name, and as I'm Peter Shipley, and this is
my name is Chris,
and my name is Binhai or Ernie.
Okay, personally, I've been doing this on and off.
Affectionately known as Oscar Mayer.
Okay, I've been doing this on and off for, I guess I did my first one about 6 years ago and did it a few times, and I got distracted by a corporate job at TRW. I'd never work for them again. And now, basically, I've gone off, I'm doing security audit work, and actually end up setting up World Wide Web Service for some goddamn reason, because they keep telling me to do that and they pay me money. He's on?
Yep.
Okay, start off, the first thing you do with a security audit, of course you need to contact and find the people that you're talking with are actually the people allowed to do the audit. That's what I usually do is insist on a meeting with the CEO or meeting the manager in charge and getting some letterhead. Now, involved in a security audit, you need a range of time for the security audit to take place. I recommend you have the upper managers warn, but they don't warn the people, or else you're going to get there and they're going to be scanned for locking doors as you walk down hallways. It's working?
Yeah.
Okay, well, first things I do as I show up is, of course, you just stop at the front door.
Walk
in, you sign up at the front door. You'd be surprised how many times you could say, well, I've come in with an associate, and they'll give you two ID passes, because it's very nice to sign for them. So you can walk away with a spare ID pass. That's one point against them. Keeping notes. Second thing you do is, don't put the badge on. Put it in your back pocket. You need the badge on to walk around. Put it on, walk around the corner, put it in your back pocket. I'd say about 80 to 90% of the companies I deal with have never been stopped. And this includes walking up, putting on bunny suits, walking into fab labs. No ID checked. Because I thought that was kind of strange, because I don't even know how to put on a bunny suit. Somebody came over and helped me. Second thing you do is, list the various things. I took some vague notes here. I want to do ID checking. I want to see if I actually pay attention to that. You need also, one of the things to do before you actually do it on is
because it'll take time, is ask if they have actually a security policy, preferably a printed one, and get a copy of it and read it. And then during the process of the day, you walk around looking to see if it's being adhered to. Our doors being locked, our terminals being left turned on, etc. In addition, interview employees, interview programmers, interview the sysads, interview the janitors as they're walking through the rooms. Then talk to the manager separately. Each time convincing them you're not here to get them fired, you're there to talk to them and find out what's going on, and if they have any good suggestions, tell you, because you're going to be reporting directly to somebody who can make a difference. I found stating that, they just open up and tell you amazing things. I found at one company, which is a manufacturing SIM chips, they had a secure policy. No internet access, no network access inside the company. But they had to communicate images to a company they're developing a product with. So the guy was taking the image master of the 64 meg chip, uploading it to NEPCON for FTP, and make it available for anonymous FTP so the remote site can get it. I asked if he was using PGP. He said, "What's that?" This is true. This is scary. And why is it happening? Because they had a policy that was too tight, and in addition, the people inside the company weren't aware of the true policies. Second thing, well, if I get a host, list of hosts on the network, ask them what hosts they think are on the network. And of course, when you come in, you put on your machine, your packet sweeps probing, and you find out what's actually on the network. The reason I was talking to Mark Lauder about what he used for pinging is because I recently put something together where I could ping a Class C in 20 seconds. And this is over my 28 line at home. And once you get on the network, probe it out, do some mapping, find out what's going on. Of course, one of the things unfortunately you have to do is if you don't break ruin the machine, they don't think it's worth paying you, but you usually can do that. Once you bite into their Ethernet, they're mine. Okay. Another thing I also discover a lot is that most security is external, not internal. We have guards, but once you get past the guards, do anything you want.
The biggest risk is the internal.
Is that
people that are allowed access doing
pass the mic?
Yeah, some of the biggest risk in security is not from external, but from internal. People that are already allowed access and now are able to do things either intentionally or non-intentionally that wasn't planned.
Scrap paper. Flip it over, you'll see why.
Hacking with AutoHack.
Hey, where's this paper? One thing I do when I fly out here, I print out all the latest security papers. It's a great thing to do on the plane. Go right to sleep. Get the policies, interview, and such. Next thing you do is actually do a walkthrough. You'll be surprised how many Simplox socks you use to secure things. I found like racks of tape dumps just standing there on racks in the hallways, unlocked, people walking by it. I mean, you need like secure card, secure ID, S key to get onto the machines, but the full dump of the machines unencrypted in the hallway. And they just don't see this, and these are the things you want to document. Another thing I really need to do is make sure you have some good writing skills. When you give them the report, just don't give them an oral report. You need to actually generate a nice, thick report, nice, verbose, list the hosts you had problems on, list the suggested patches. You also have to tell them, like, oh yeah, read cert, I mean, it doesn't hurt. And just tell them what needs to be done. Because many times in these companies, unless you actually explicitly list what needs to be done, it's not going to get done. And while you're in there negotiating the contract, that go in there and say, I'll give you a list of things to be done, and as a part of the deal, you'll come in to make sure they're done right. Because doing the second part of contract negotiation just doesn't really fly very often. Anything to add?
Well, I can agree with that.
What experiences have you had? I'm trying to portray you guys. What experience have you had doing this? And a lot of these people probably want to either plan to do this or think of breaking into the business. Let's explain to them how to do it.
One thing I recommend is taking very good notes on everything you do, because they're going to want to know what you found, how to fix it, and everything like that, and log your time, what you're doing, and what you found, because if you just say, oh, I'll remember it later, you won't. You'll go back and say, now what did I fix on this system? What did I fix on that system? Because they all seem the same after a while. You got to remember what you did, when you did it.
Yes.
And also a good thing is get a contract laid out beforehand, saying what you will do, what you won't do, what you're responsible for, make sure to cover your liability. So if something gets broken or anything like that, you're not going to be held liable for it. Because if you're helping showing them what's wrong with our system and you find something, you don't want them to say, well, that wasn't there before. So let's get a good contract laid out that tells you what you're going to do and what you're liable for and what you're not liable for.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sign off on that.
Right. The trick with the contracts with security audits, it's very similar to software development, is that you want to have milestones along the way. You want to clearly define what it is you're going to do, because most of the time they don't really understand that completely. And you want to have a sign-off point at different steps or different phases along the way, so that you're being paid as you accomplish certain milestones, and they actually sign off, say, yes, you did what you said you were going to do, and if we want to do something more, well, that's extra. It's not on the contract necessarily. So that'll keep you out of a lot of arguments on when you're going to get the check.
Yeah. Also, make it, also think about installing software and such, have a public domain. Tell them you're installing public domain software. Tell them where you got it, and it's not yours to sell or theirs to turn into a product. So a lot of times they think they're hiring you to do something, and they're like, oh, we're going to internalize this as a product, which is illegal against certain public domain software licenses. Yeah. And they get a little bit upset afterwards. So state where you got it. I mean, this is not Pete Shipley's super secure package. This is a firewall toolkit. I mean, I'm just installing the standard stuff in the internal firewalls. Oh, by the way, that's what I'm implying. Firewalls are not just for external use only. I mean, a proper company has an internal firewall where they ensure, where they basically firewall buildings from each other, different departments from each other. Another thing about checking off, actually I forgot to bring it. I have a sheet of check-offs where I have literally a checkbox, which is list the checks to do and list the hosts. And it's basically, you know, is root readable, is this done, is pass the file readable, does this in. And I go in this type, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And I find it's very useful. And after I do this second check, I actually go through it. Because a few times when I've even set up a firewall, I forgot to turn on shadow passwords or something. I mean, nobody's perfect. Write up a checklist and follow your checklist. It also looks a lot more impressive to the person. They actually have a, they have some printed forms that you work with. You look a lot more professional. And also, maybe, I don't know, if someone actually emails me and reminds me, maybe I'll stick it up for FTP somewhere. Any comments? You mentioned?
Just a few, and not to take anything away from anybody, but more exclusively my experience talking here. Tell me to shut up.
No, I'm here because... I invited you here because, you know, our collective experience is a lot better than my particular view.
Okay. Pete doesn't know it, but we work together. Oh, good. Okay. I didn't think we recognized each other. I went and had a few beers, so I feel better. I take exception with the idea that you'll have to schedule a time. In my experience, these things are gruesome and sometimes go on for literally years. Secondly, as a personal idea, but I take exception with the idea that you should not let top management know. If you're doing your job correctly, you're going to destroy whatever fantasies that this organization had about how secure they are. And as a matter of fact, you will be so successful with the most trivial efforts that you will typically disrupt them right to the board. So it's extremely important that you go in with an attitude which is unfamiliar to most of us that sort of hack informally, right, and make sure the top management, the very top management, understands and buys off on not only your presence, but the fact that you are going to cut them badly where it hurts and they're going to bleed.
Also, the contact person, these things are really useful because they work anywhere in the building usually. And if they can't get, if you're poking around and you disrupt something, like one time I was impersonating an IP address that turned out to be their license server, and I kind of screwed up SprayMaker for most of the building. Having one of these and make sure they can contact you no matter where you are in the building helps a lot. Because if they find out there's some guy running around the building and things are going wrong, I mean, even if the server crashes, it's not your fault. They're going to think it's you, and if they can't find you, chaos ensues. So make sure you can be reached at all times.
That's also important why you have to have in the contract, too. You have it to have, you can't overlook anything because you have to have every single detail explicitly put down so that there's no future arguments and that so that they know what you're doing. But I find also that it's best just to deal with as few people as possible so that there's not a knowledge of what's going on so that they carry on just as usual. And that way that way you can give them a realistic assessment of what's going on.
Yeah, I've had cases where as I was walking around, they literally had people run up ahead of me locking doors.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, they didn't really, you know, they, I was more bizarre, like, doing this stuff, but, you know, they... Little caught the guy, he kind of marched a little bit faster and, you know, went around corners and there he is, run along.
Yeah, and on that topic of doors and physical security, that's one of the important things, like just the front desk, like just trying, first of all, to get in there walking past, whether it's just wearing a suit or I'll sometimes go wearing courier uniforms,
That works great.
That sort of thing. You get, like, you know, a nice big duffel bag or FedEx walkie-talkie hanging out your side, a couple packages, and just see how many different areas of the building you can access, where you can get in, what controls, if you can get into the communications room, the computer room, check the secretary's offices, if there's the IP addresses, and et cetera, listed on the terminals, and also if they're using magnetic card coding, check the checksum of it and see how copyable and duplicable it is if you're for guest passes, see what level of access, because the level of access for guest passes on magnetic locks is it's totally variable, but a lot of people just who are working security, they just leave it everyone at the same preset access. So someone who's just going in to visit for some trivial matter can get access to the highest levels of the building. So that's another physical security aspect to take a look at.
I mean, one point I'd like to point out is enforcement policy about walking without passes. A couple of times I was walking around without a pass, and the secretary would go, you know, you can be fined $300 for not having your pass. And, you know, I just go, yeah, fine me. If they don't fine me, they're not doing the policy. I mean, what good is it to walk by and says, you need a pass, as the person walks in, or a movie theater where you walk in, the usher goes, you should have a ticket as you walk in. I mean, it doesn't do any good if it's not enforced. And I've never had it enforced. I've had people catch me, I've had people bitch at me, and kind of, okay, browbeat me to going back and putting on my badge. But I've never had anybody fine me.
Speaking for the loyal opposition, I applaud your detailed technical approach to this. However, the grim reality of corporate America and most businesses in the world, as I know it at least, including some government agencies, in fact, maybe most government agencies, is that this is ridiculously political. So my advice continues to be start with a presence, and I want to talk about the contracts and examples that you can use for them. Start with a presence which is the most formal that you can possibly put together. And the idea, in my mind at least, I don't want to argue with you, Pete, in details, but my suggestion is that by the time you get there and start your walk around, everybody ought to know that you're coming. And my benchmark is if somebody in this audience knows that I'm going on site, I'm very relaxed. If I show up and nobody knows that I'm there, then I may not even stay on site for any more than an hour or so, because I understand the nature of the political explosion which is going to take place when something like a walk around steps on the informal political toes of somebody that that is in a powerful enough political position to disrupt your work. So I don't argue with the nature of the walkthrough. All I caution is that you should be pre-announced in a way that
around the wire to the bottom.
Oops, sorry. You should be pre-announced in a way that allows people that you are going to talk to think about what it is that you're doing there. The primary reason for this is the other side of the coin. I like the earlier comment about the fact that the internal people are the most dangerous and worst problem that that you confront. The essence of this is to get to the people who understand what the real vulnerabilities are and provide a political framework that is comfortable for them to express their opinions. Because no matter what you do as an outsider, you will never understand the infrastructure as well as an in-house system programmer, especially one that's been there for 30 years since it was a mainframe environment. So the essence of my comment is, right, do everything you can do to be calm, cool, and collected. Let everybody know you're coming. Give them lots of time to think about the questions that you're going to ask, and relax and enjoy your walk around. So that you can ask questions about things like, why are you using PGP?
Well, obviously our cell is slightly different, but a part of it is you're doing policy analysis. If you won't end doing policy analysis, yes, it's going to be, I don't mean to call up to you, I don't want to get a manager fired, but if something occurs where one manager thought security, another manager was actually security, and my presence brought this to light, then it's actually helping. By warning it and having somebody step down so he doesn't step on somebody's toes, I don't think it's really helping the problem that actually that's occurring here, which is a policy problem. And again, I don't believe in having, I believe there should be some warning, some middle managers should actually know you're running around. This way, when you do get caught, you don't get arrested instantly. But I don't like having too much warning, because again, I see people running around trying to fix things, and it just You know, either I get paranoid, I assume all the doors are already unlocked because I'm making sure they're locked on me, or I just lose a clear focus of what's really going on in this company.
Take this back and forth.
Again, it seems that you've done more corporation, more government. I've mostly almost done 100% corporations.
We had some questions.
Oh. Yeah. That's where we disagree on the panel.
But yeah, I think that, you know, people obviously that are hiring you need to know what you're about to do, but you might want a phased approach where you come in at one time with only a couple people that are at the upper level knowing why you're there. You know, they can cover you if you get caught doing something so you don't get thrown in jail. But otherwise, you're going to get people covering up. It's just like if you say, well, I'm going to hack your system, you know, see if you can keep me out. They're going to do a lot of things that they aren't normally going to be doing necessarily, and you're not going to get a realistic picture, and neither are they, of what their security situation is.
Right, right. And the point, the point is, if you are seriously going to hack an infrastructure, right, I mean, if you're seriously going to hack an infrastructure, fuck all this contract shit. You sit across the street and listen to the spectrum and then work your way inside until you attack what you've got, right? So the essence of your presence as a hired consultant is to work, unfortunately, within the ugly political realities of the world. Okay. So my expectation and experience is that if you do this in a careful way, certainly not everybody is going to understand the exact details of what you're doing there. But my contention is, unless you have the absolute cooperation of the network managers and the system managers, you're fucked. You can't do anything.
Sometimes
they'll run and hide as soon as you walk in the door. They'll be gone, compliments of the infrastructure that is right here in this room. They'll be gone and hidden, right? Any serious effort will be gone and hidden before you even get on site.
Each incident is.
I should point out there's two types, many kinds of audits.
Yeah.
One's a policy audit. One's actually a network audit. Another one's there's different focuses. And you know, as we pointed out, you know, I like to attack a company policy. I like to attack a company building. You know, guards at the front door, but unalarmed back doors. Little things like that. I can do the firewall test from home half the time. And so it should be pointed out there are different types of audits. And a lot of the things we're going to say are contradictory, but then also depends on the type of audit. Sorry, cut you off.
Right. No, that's fine. I think it just goes back to what we were saying in the beginning, that you have to have a clear idea of what you're going to accomplish for them and what they're expecting. And based on that, then you determine, you know, if who you're going to notify, if you're going to notify people, and take it from there.
Okay. Exactly. And one comment here is in line. One of terminology. I believe, based on what I've heard on this panel, that we are all talking about what I refer to as an assessment rather than an audit. How many of you know an actual auditor? Those of you who don't are cheating yourselves. Yeah. Right? These guys wear green eye shades. They are typically 20 to 30 year veterans of the industry and are used to sitting down with regulatory and external supervisory organizations of some kind and selecting one or two vulnerabilities which will be the result of your work as, you know, a technical assister to their audit efforts, as opposed to what I think we all do, right, is what I classify as an assessment, which is to say, look, all of your rules are fucked. Most of the auditing standards that are in use don't even come close to acknowledging the two vulnerabilities of the technology which we're using, never mind the fallacious assumption that your business systems are making by relying on these. So why don't we just let down our hair here and relax a little bit and go through this in a common sense fashion instead of trying to have a checklist. So I agree with everything that was said up to the point where we have to split the hair between what an audit is and whatever else you would call it. I call it an assessment.
We had a question over here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I usually reserve about a day and a half per building, and with a day and a half, you have more than enough time to squeeze yourself into a scheduled meeting with proper deduction.
Yeah.
Well, I agree completely. When I do a tax, if there's warning, they notice my pings. Mm-hmm. If there's no warning, they ask, oh, somebody tried to tell them that as guest again.
Can I make a strong statement? This is my 12th year of doing this kind of work. I have never, let me underscore that, N-E-V-E-R, never, ever, ever, ever met an infrastructure which can stand up to a dedicated attack, period. So I claim that you got two choices here. You can either belly up to the bar and admit the fact that with a small amount of parlor magic, you can break whatever they have in progress, right, as security measures, or scrape this right down to the bare metal and prepare to belly up against the political infrastructure and say, look, boys, you're not serious.
I mean, some examples that I've found inside companies and such, and these are policies I've actually seen in place, like shipping software with debugging turned on. People did American Express checking system. This was passed 6 years ago, so it doesn't work anymore. But American Express had an OCR system for you to write on your seat, sign it. They actually, this way, have little squares for you to write the numbers in, so they could OCR it. If you wrote SIF, signature on file, on your seat, it would go through the machine without being read. This shipped as a product. And everybody in the company knew about it, but political policy was, well, we already shipped it, and we don't want to lose face by fixing it, so they ship it again. The same company had a configuration management written by people who didn't have any concept of Unix operating system. So what they had is this program sort of like Dusu. They called it, I'll leave its name aside. But it was installed in UserLocal. We also call it UserLocal Dusu, but Dusu had no restrictions. Take arguments, run them as root. Anybody on the machine, anything on the machine can do this. This machine handles a major, several international banks' checking systems have this program installed currently. And if you did, and these machines are also running 4.3 vanilla, which has about every bug you probably ever heard of. And when I point these things out to them, they're like, yeah, these problems are here. Now, why don't you fix our security? Because we really brought this internet firewall stuff. And I said, well, I did that for them too. But they also point out to them, like, one of your problems, you're just wide open for internal attack. I mean, from any terminal anywhere in that corporation, they had a T1 line to the remote bank site for maintenance purposes. Go over that T1 line. You're on the internal networks of the banks. You shut them down. Wipe their disks. Do anything you want. And they oversaw that because, well, no one's going to do that. We're worried about people from the outside.
Peter, I agree with you. I claim, however, that in the same strong sense that I said I've never, ever, ever had certain things happen, here's a similar parallel. I've never walked into an infrastructure where I found complete fucking idiots in charge of the place, right, at a technical level. Usually what's happening is there's some poor son of a bitch that's in the trenches, working 25 hours a day, sacrificing his personal life, trying to fucking understand what management is telling him, and not doing a good job of anything. Never mind, like I said, keeping the home fires burning. So as a general statement, what I find as a regular course in this kind of work is that those people on the front line will help you find exactly what the problem is. And most of the time, that is an obstreperous political structure which will not listen to what they have been saying forever. For instance, a large company that I was just in, for some unknown reason, the business side said, you will deploy 45 sites on a private network, by X date. Within a very short period of time, the already overstressed network infrastructure fell apart, right? And the idea is that they screamed bloody murder through the legitimate management channels, and got no attention. It wasn't that the frontline techies didn't know what the risks were. It was that nobody was listening. My point is as follows. In some cases, an overt and extremely targeted attack is exactly the order of the day. That's perfect. Perfect. However, it better be done within the constraints of what it is that the trusted internal technical resources know and understand
and done with tact.
Say. Right.
Tact is very important. Don't walk in there like your shit doesn't stink, because they're just going to like get a bad flavor about you and ignore anything you say.
When you go away, you're a contractor. When you go away, they're left with their internal guys. And if you haven't done everything you can do to make sure that you understand the lay of the political land and work within that construct, there's nothing that you can do to make it turn out right.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've apologized to that.
Yeah, you have the own internal politics will work against you, because you'll come in often and uncover something that, you know, somebody's ass comes on the line as a result of it, and you know maybe they worked real hard to make something happen and they forgot about something that was important that you found out, and if you don't get them a way to save face, so to speak, and fix the problem, they may go against you and try to discount the findings that you've done and make you work a lot harder to get your point across. And a lot of times these people, I've had clients say to me, well, you know, our management needs to hear it from you. We've been telling them, but you're the expert. They need to hear you say it because they don't believe it when we say it. So.
In fact, I actually recommend that to them. I find I get a lot more respect from the sysadmin and security officers. I say, you know, I was hired by your upper management to pat them on, you know, to reassure them or find out what's going on. And true, they've been saying the same thing to them for years, but coming from me, they'll listen to me. Now, you tell me what you want said.
You don't want them to lose their jobs. You're there trying to help them do
exactly
a better job.
And if they tell me what they want said, I mean, if it's reasonable, I'll say it.
And another thing,
I mean, then I'm doing my job. I'm going in, I'm auditing, or audits we're using today. I'm going in, I'm talking to people, I'm interviewing, I'm finding out what is wrong. People more willing to tell me what's wrong once they find out I'm not there to hurt them.
Yeah.
Dress nicely. I mean, okay, the hacker look is good in some cases, but, you know, I don't like ties, but I will wear a collared shirt.
But will you wear your fangs? That's what I want.
I did on one site, and they loved it. They also knew, I knew the person who was hiring me, so.
Basically, also, just you have to also look at the psychology of it. Say, first of all, when you're doing a network penetration, you have to be very careful about making an agreement between what you're actually going to be doing, whether you're just going to be testing to see the vulnerabilities or actually taking it as far as someone could, like whether you're going to be scripting your own programs or whether you're just going to be saying, I could have done this. Another thing is you have to be very careful. For some people who actually do hack and for fun, that sort of thing, you have to totally separate the two worlds, because you'd have to take it very step by step and very professional. And another thing is you have to be very careful, like say about email insecurity. You can't read that or anything. You just but say it's very vulnerable. You just have to make a note of it and then inform them of how to patch things up. And another thing is just on a psychology issue, you just have to be you can't just say, oh, you know, how stupid can you be? Your system is so lax. You have to, you know, be understanding with them and take them through the steps of it and then show them every step of the way how to repair it and then provide the continued assistance with them.
I mean, another point is about, we mentioned about what's required, what's to be delivered. One problem that I have is I agreed to present documentation on how to fix things. And my impression was, here's a tech document, here's the suggested patches, here are the mistakes I found, here's the mistakes that I predict you will make, here's how to fix it. It says, no, we want user documentation, which is an order of magnitude more difficult to write. And since it was a fixed rate contract, you know, it was like a little bit of grudgency. I actually was able to skip a little bit of documentation for them. And ever since then, my contract is very clear on what to deliver.
Definitely.
So again, that's another warning. People, and also another thing is make sure they know whether you're going to fix the site or not. They want you to come in here. They want you to come in there and list the problems or fix the problems or help them fix the problems. These are all separate things, separate amounts of man hours. And also, how many machines? I mean, you'll find the machines replicate, you'll find the same problem all over the company. You'll sit down to sysad and do it once with them, you expect to do it 50, 80 times? That's going to make your contract minimum wage. You know, be very clear in what they want and what they want delivered and what they want and what they expect from you, or else you're going to sign up for this. Oh, this great contract. I'm getting paid, you know, N dollars a day to get this done. You found out that they also expect you to do trivial sysad work for the next 2 months.
Yeah. That's real true. What you might end up doing, sometimes you get into a project where it's hard to tell what it's going to cost to do a lot of different things. So you might want to do the first phase implementation overview, whatever you want to call it, and then you'll give them numbers on the stuff that you discover and how to approach those problems and how much it's going to cost to fix that later. But that way it kind of keeps you, limit your exposure on coming in. And you also find out how savvy they're going to be to requiring you, to have things in excruciating detail, or, if they'll give you a little loose play as far as what's on the contract.
Yeah, what I usually do is I spec out, this amount of money for the testing. If you want me to fix it, that's a separate bill for this amount of money, which is overly inflated because I hate sysad work after all these years. And so if you really want me to do it, pay me this grotesque amount of money, and I'll do it. Else, for a reasonable amount of money, I'll come in and check that it's being done, which is what I want to do.
And one thing you want to be careful of is defining what your support contract will be after you're done with the job per se, whether they can call you up whenever they want and ask you questions. How you going to bill them for that? Whether what kind of support you give them afterwards when they have, well, something else goes wrong, or is this secure? They have more questions for you. You've got to define how you're going to bill them for that. If it's going to be, oh sure, I answer questions for you for free, and if you want me to come in and do more audits, more work for you, then I'll charge you for that. You want to define really what your billing policy will be. Try not to be drawn in. It's really easy for them to draw you into doing something you don't want to do. So you have to be sure to say, no, I'm not going to do this, or I will do this for this much more.
Yeah, I usually work that out on a retainer basis.
Yeah, get a
I basically say, I call a retainer for this basic amount of money. You can bother me every once in a while. Just don't do it at night. And I'll sit down on the phone and I'll interpret what this posting is. I mean, they're on bug tracks, another mail list. They see some new send mail bug. I says, yeah, don't worry about it. It's a send mail problem. But, retainer at least gets you a little bit of money because I don't have the heart to. They call me up a half an hour. I mean, sure, I'm losing money, but if it takes me longer to bill them, it's not worth my time.
Yeah, certain amount you got to do for PR. They kind of expect that. Gee, I forgot to ask this question. I want to call you and ask that. I don't want to pay $100 to get an answer. But yeah, if it starts to go overboard, you definitely want some sort of retainer. And you'll tell them we'll charge hours against this retainer fee each month and whatever. And you just keep track of that and send them a bill.
And after a prepayment on retainer.
Right.
And basically, you're allowed to use so many hours in 6 months, and if these hours aren't used, I keep the money.
The hard part, in my experience, is that lots of information is available. I'm sorry to report, after many, many years in this game, I give away, still continue to give away, and expect to have to continue to give away at least 50% of my time to casual conversations, merely making sure that clients are educated. Second point I would make is that I do not, under any circumstances, accept every job that comes in the door. I require an educated client that understands that they're going to have to pay dollars for what they want. Secondly, that they're not going to get away from changing their infrastructure. And thirdly, that there's a shitload of work for them to do in this whole process.
Don't be afraid to be cheap. I mean, but don't be afraid not to be cheap. Basically, hit them up. Basically, people will call me and be like, you charge how much an hour? I go, yeah. They go, well, we have this other guy. We hire the CISA guy who does this stuff. I say, yeah, you hire him and hire me to fix it.
And also mention.
And usually they kind of either see I'm serious and I don't hear from them again. Obviously they weren't worth talking to, or, well, I guess one out of five times I could get that statement gets me a job.
Yeah, or they call you 6 months later and go, yeah, that thing we tried to, well, it didn't really.
Well, my rates are higher now.
And we wondered if you'd still like to come in at that price.
Oh, by the way, personal hint: fix-it rates are higher than setup rates because you got to figure out what went wrong, what they did, which is saves a lot more of your time, and you got to get done in a quarter of the time too.
Also, never underestimate anything. Never say, oh, yeah, I'll fix it. You can fix this in a couple of days. Always overestimate how long things will take.
Right.
If you underestimate, it takes longer, they're going to be very mad in some cases,
My bid on firewall setup is 40 hours. I mean, that gives me enough time to go there, set up six Ciscos, and bashing hosts, because they never mean to get there, oh, yeah, we'll do BSA. And if I show up, so where's BSA? Oh, we ordered it today. BSA ships in 2 days, fortunately, but okay, we've already blown 2 days, and they want it done by Friday. So I hope nothing else goes wrong.
Yeah, you'll always look better. If you estimate long and you do it in the time you think you could have done it in, you'll be early, you'll look good, but if it takes you longer, then you'll be on time with what you told them, so, you know, you'll still look good that way.
And if you are incorporated, which you should be, you can always say, well, you need to order these things. Shall I order them for my corporation? Then you know when the delivery dates are and you know the correct part's been ordered. Or else you'll get there and the V35 cable isn't there.
Oh, deja vu.
More comments? Let me pick up the threads that sort of spilled out quickly. There's a lot of excellent points that were made earlier. Good writing skills. My idea would be that sort of as a general statement, those of you who are not currently doing sort of formal consulting work are going to discover that despite the fact that you may have unique technical skills, that you are indulging yourself now in a career change which is going to join people that have literally devoted their careers to consulting kinds of endeavors. So I have specific advice for you to keep yourself out of trouble. Number one, consider investing not only in trips to DEF CON, but also in trips to professional societies. Learn to wear a suit and become an observer and watch and understand the extent to which computer security is an institution in our society, not just in the United States. Secondly, make sure that you write down the following reference, just so you get a real hard, cold picture of the way the world is. There is an organization in the country called the Independent Computer Consultants Association. Anybody a member? Oh my. I appear to be the only member. I suggest that you contact them and have them send you literature. For a couple hundred bucks a year, you can join. And they will send you example contracts like have been spoken about up here. Yeah. The onerous part of it for most of you is as follows. In order to join the ICCA or any of the other professional societies, you are going to have to sign an agreement which is going to make you search your soul in terms of some of the earlier topics that I mentioned in terms of my presentation about strategy and tactics and what your life is about and where you are going, right? The biggest problem that I see amongst people that want to enter big time, big money security consulting is that they don't understand some of the basic decisions that they made in their formative years will come back and grab them by the ass. Because despite what many people have said here, the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, and experience on the front line, is only one question, right? Client only wants to know one thing, really, and that is how in the fuck they can trust you. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
What'd you say? I didn't hear you.
I think you're being spotted as a Fed. Military isn't Fed? Wait a minute, let's go to the audience on this one. What does he do for the military?
Likely story.
Tough question. Who is the guy that was sitting on your left? Oh, we already know him. On your right. Yeah, the other guy. The guy that someone else identified as a Secret Service agent.
You're out the door.
No, that was the NSA agent.
He's disguised as the Bush in back.
You're the guy in between.
He's under deep cover.
Yeah, those guys are sneaky. One snuck out yesterday, and now that guy bailed just in time. I've got inside information. Speak directly into the smoke detectors.
Okay, so wait.
What is it called? Do we give him a shirt or not? Is he a Fed? Would you be offended if we give you one? This is my dilemma. I have one set left, and we have two speakers to go, and so I'd rather unload them now. Do you want the shirt? Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
The company said I'm a Fed. No problem. Well, one of the things I wanted to touch upon is reports and such. I'm a lousy spell, my grammar sucks. So, I mean, don't be afraid to subcontract that part out. Hire somebody to fix it for you, or else you're going to be really embarrassed. I've been embarrassed before.
Yeah. Writers charge.
Anybody's read my writings? They know what I'm talking about.
Writers charge less than you do for the security audit. Hire one for a day or whatever to produce the documents you need, and then just reuse them.
Another thing, if I'm on site for 8 hours, that's going to turn into approximately 10. Yes. Well, every day you're on site can add up to maybe 2 days off site of document preparation, data analysis. So work that into your billing schedule too.
And one thing, if this is your first time working as a consultant, just remember to look up all the tax laws and everything, because taxes is a lot more complex when you're working for yourself. Because you have to pay.
Expect to give away 40%.
So be sure to learn keep track of your earnings and keep track of all that, because it will come back to haunt you.
There's where something like the ICCA can help, because one of the things you get for joining that, I don't work for them, but I find I get a lot of good from them. One of the things you get from them is like a 50-page book that explains what happened in 1976 when the feds came after independent consultants because body shops were abusing our right as independents to work as independents. So there's a lot of information out there, and I couldn't agree more. One quick comment. Again, I hate to sound like some kind of sage that's lecturing here, but God, I got an awful lot of bruises. I don't think anybody understood the subtlety of your last comment. He said, hire somebody else to write it and then reuse it.
Yeah.
One of my friends who has been in the business, I consider him a mentor, he's been in the security business for 30 years. Okay, in the security business for 30 years. I told him recently, I said, Jesus, I'm getting sick of this shit. He says, what's the matter? I said, I write the same fucking words in every same report. Same thing, same thing, same thing, same thing. He says, well, I'd rather do security architecture these days. And in fact, I've raised my rates for security assessments because I can just pull the shit off of the shelf. Right?
Sure.
I've got so much shit that I've written over the last 30 years with the same fucking words about the same fucking problems and the same fucking brain fade.
And that makes the report look that much larger, too. There's a lot of basic things that the companies need to know about this security, and that's going to be repeated. A lot of that's going to end up repeating in certain reports.
I mean, you can have a glossary this thick.
Cut, paste, word processing, spell check, send it. Yeah. It's that easy.
Hey, tech is my friend, include files.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
A note about good notes, right? I enjoyed and appreciate.
I will make my note, my note form available if somebody actually emails me and reminds me about it. It's written in tech.
You have to be a little, Dylan said it best, right? You have to be honest to break the law. And Ricky Lee Jones says something like, you gotta know the rules before you can break them, right? Okay, note-taking. Understand that when you go through that door as a consultant, you are likely to be subpoenaed. And as a result, they may drag you, all your fucking notes, all your fucking friends, and everything you've ever done in your life up there in front of a jury or a judge. So the conventional advice that I have to give you parallels that you'll find in operation in your local homicide department. Those guys keep two sets of notes, one that's official and one that's unofficial. Because you are never going to be able to report everything that you find. Never, ever, ever. And number two, the main thrust of the comment is if you ever do report everything that you find, you're probably going to jail.
Oh, speaking of notes, another thing I put on my schedule of audit is, I do the audit now, deliver date, et cetera. I also specify a date which my notes are destroyed. And I like destroying my notes because you guys are going to break into my house. I have a fireplace or bank receipts go in there, lots of kindling this way. But I destroy my notes. And I also tell a client to destroy my notes. This serves two purposes. They feel more assured that when my home system is compromised again, nothing will be stolen.
Although I did enjoy the
second, they know not to call me up and get another version of the report or, in 6 months after they can't call me up and ask me for details, they'll say, I destroyed my notes. Like, it is what I remember, but I destroyed my notes as per contract. And who can complain against this? Sorry?
I was just going to say, I enjoyed the diskettes that I got out of your trash. Thank you.
Wow. We have probably field some more questions. We're very slim on picking questions. Any? You that sleep? Is that boring?
Your company is you, because the only thing the other management is going to see is that report. don't know basic grammar English, you don't know anything else either.
Yeah, they may not understand what you tell them face-to-face completely, but they'll read your report over and over, and they'll ask their expert to explain it to them. Oh. That's really what you
do
with them.
Another thing about the reports, safety deposit boxes. I actually do keep copies of the reports they make, and those go into safety deposit box. Unless I'm hired by a company to help them do an audit, which one, because a couple of times, for example, Pilot, good company, they hired me to help them do the audits and things up busy. Those are the only people I actually don't keep copies of the reports I write, because that's their job to do, because they're presenting the report. But because keep a copy of the report, because they're going to call you up and say, on page 3, you said this. And you go, huh? You know, but don't keep it in your house. Safe deposit box. They say, if it does get stolen, it's not your fault.
One more quick comment. I really enjoyed your suggestion that you have a complete checklist of vulnerabilities and fixes. I'd sure like to see it.
The checklist is not gold. It's basically, it's meant as a, I mean, I forget things. So you go in there, you know, check this. I mean, you forget, you overlook things. You know, I looked at the permission to the passive file 30 times today. I might forget it the 31st time. This is a checklist to serve as a personal reminder. This is not a audit kit. I've been kind of toying with the idea of actually making an audit kit. And actually, we talked to a few people, and we're thinking of actually doing an audit kit where here's the audit kit that you can do, and then I'm also going to write some report generating software, which I kind of keep in my back pocket to make me faster than you if you have my kit.
And the only thing I want to respond to is welcome to those of us who have broken bones, because nobody I know of can A, assemble a definitive list of these problems, and B, find out how the hell to get it to market soon enough to do any good. So my advice to you is,
I know.
My advice is to try and relax a little bit here, because there are literally thousands of security professionals who are not represented in this audience, who wouldn't be caught dead in this audience, that have hundreds of thousands of pages of written documentation, which is the level above what is Pete's talking about in terms of, right, the individual vulnerabilities that exist, right? That talks to the business.
No, this is not this list is not Hackman. This list is just a checklist of things to do while I'm on machine on console.
Right, exactly. Those are essentially technical details which should be supported, right, by things like policy. That next level up, right, towards the organization, towards the business, towards, you know, liability, towards all that kind of crapola, is 30 years of experience. And my only caution to you is, please don't be naive. Most of us that are in the game want you and your expertise, but we hope that you don't embarrass yourself by writing something that says, here is the answer, right? My advice is to say, here is what I found, here is my opinion about your exposure, right? Not, here is the answer.
I mean, those of my history, I tried to write a semi-definitive list, and I'm still writing it. I have about 400 pages of this bug section compared to 200 pages of text. At which point I kind of stopped. I mean, I document the important bugs that make the news, but then I just gave up. I mean, 400. And these are vague descriptions sometimes.
No.
It also looks like he's edging us off the stage here.
Okay, well, just quickly. Okay.
Okay, just that. Do that. After that, I could just all of us announce our names again. And if you want to talk to us some more, I'm sure we could easily bribe with a few Long Island iced teas in the bar. I got 6 drinks last time.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything. It's an interesting field to go into if you want to do this. And one of the nice things is they want you to find problems, and they're actually will be most of the time they will be receptive to what you find. So it gives you a unique opportunity to actually go in there and find things and have a receptive audience to what you find in most cases.
So don't be afraid to give referrals. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm working for a company that says, oh, we want a good firewall with support, you know, can we hire you to do the firewall and do support for it? I go, well, I'm not that great a person for the support because I have other contracts that take up my time. Hire Pilot. And many times I've gone to a job interview and end up selling somebody else. I mean, yes, I could use the money. Yes, I'd like to make a mortgage payment this month, all this other stuff. But hire him. He's better at, let's say you're better at Windows NT systems or something. I'm Unix. He's NT. Yes, he could hire me to do this stuff. Yes, I've kind of done it before, but hire him. He's better at it. If you say that, they'll call you back. Maybe not for that job, but they will call you back. Or when they have a friend who wants an auditor, they go, oh, yeah, talk to this guy. this is a no-lose situation. Because if you go in there, take a job that's out of your range or something you can't provide, you're going to look bad. You're going to make money this year, not going to make money the next year. By giving referrals, passing the buck, well, not passing the buck, passing the job references, telling people, you know, don't say because you're too busy. I mean, if you don't say if you're too busy if you can't do it. Just say, no, it's not my professional. Or, no, I've got some contracts coming up and I don't have time to give the full support that you want. And refer them. And you'll get a lot more respect.
And it works both ways, too. The person you refer could probably refer you for a lot of jobs, too. So.
Yeah, and you just establish, whether you're working locally or whatever, you establish a community. And by doing that, you can do each other favors and help each other out and suit things to people's best talents and availabilities.
I mean, nobody's the elite Uber hacker. I mean, nobody can do everything. And when you admit that, you've got their respect.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything. Okay.
Okay, let's introduce ourselves again.
I agree with everything. I think you just gain their respect and their trust, and there's a lot of opportunities out there.
I mean, I've cleaned up a lot of messes from when the person who could fix everything installed everything, and I come in there and fix it. And that's one of my pet peeves. So, I'm Peter Shipley.
I'm Oscar Meyer.
I'm Chris.
I'm Bin Hai.
You can reach me as mel@well.com.
Thank you.
If you have any questions? Yeah.